What's up, listeners? Today, we find the perfect episode for Chief O'Brien. And they don't use him at all. And we ask the question, would you want to be cloned? Stay with us.
Welcome to the TNG Podcast, the number one place in the Alpha Quadrant to geek out about all things Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm your co-host, Charisse.
Hey, I'm your co-host, Andrea. Today, we're talking Season 2, Episode 18, entitled Up the Long Ladder, which basically means nothing. This episode was written by Melinda M. Snodgrass and directed by Weinrich Kolbe, or Kolbe. I still don't know how to say that name. Here's the synopsis of Up the Long Ladder. The Enterprise receives an automated distress call from satellite orbiting a human colony on the planet Bringloidi 5, which is in danger from solar flares from its star. The colony turns out to have been founded by the crew of the SS Mariposa, a freighter launched from Earth several hundred years earlier. The Bringloidi colony, now led by an Irishman named Danilo O'Dell and his hot-tempered daughter Brenna, are followers of an early 22nd century philosopher who advocated returning to a pre-industrial agrarian lifestyle, and when taken aboard the Enterprise, must quickly adapt to the 24th century technology. I'd love to know your initial thoughts on this episode, because I have none and also many.
I'm right there with you. But before we do that, let's introduce our special guest, and then we'll take some initial thoughts of this most interesting of episodes. So today we have an oldie but a goodie returning, one of our past guests. We have Gil Barron with us, and we want to welcome him back to the show. He has had his hooks in the entertainment scene forever, including working with Comedy Central and DreamWorks and CBS, just to name a few. And he's produced comedy shows all over LA, including your late night show tonight. So, Gil, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me back. Did you just call me an oldie but a goodie?
I did. It wasn't in my notes. That was my improv. That's as good as it gets right there.
I was going to say a whatie but a who?
As soon as you said that, I was like, did you just call him an oldie? If we called a woman guest that, she probably would just get up and walk out.
That's why we have so few women guests.
So, Gil, since you are a guest, do you want to start off with your initial thoughts on this episode?
My initial thoughts is that it's two episodes that are kind of pasted together. Weird that it seems to be the prototype for Star Trek Insurrection. I don't know if you guys made that connection.
I did not make that connection.
But there's also a C-plot with Worf and Pulaski that goes literally nowhere. It's so weird. But I'm into it. I like it. I like the pairing. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff to talk about. But this is, like, very racist towards Irish people, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes.
I don't know if it's meant to be racist or if it's just meant to be stereotypical so that we recognize it. Because, like, if you think about original series and Scotty, who's Scottish, and, you know, they're just not very creative with that sort of thing. But who knows? Who knows what they were thinking? There's only so much forgiveness we can give them.
I know what they were thinking because I did my research on this episode.
Because you looked at the memory beta, sure.
Yeah. No. Actually, I did look at my Unauthorized Trek Voyages book and looked up this episode. So here was kind of what was going on. Maurice Hurley was, or still is, I don't know if they're still alive, but Maurice Hurley was, let's just say, a like super out loud and proud Irishman who would like march at the front of the St. Paddy's Day parade every year and all this stuff. So like very, very, very Irish. And when they first
were talking- And he was the showrunner this year, right?
Yes, yes. And when they were talking about this like pre-industrial agrarian lifestyle as a placeholder, they were like, we'll just make them like Irish tinkerers. And they were like, okay, we'll like find another sort of maybe less offensive a group of people or stereotype to like play out. But Maurice was like, you know what? No, go for it. Just make them like straight up Irish tinkerers, which makes no effing sense whatsoever. But that was like what they were thinking. It was just Maurice Hurley being a leprechaun and being like, no, let's totally have Irish tinkerers. And I was like, ugh.
Irish tinkerers out of the 1870s.
Thank you. Thank you. That's what I thought, too. It was like, we don't live the way we did 300 years ago. Is this like a version of like Irish Amish where you just decide you're not going to live past a certain I don't know. It was so weird.
There's so much shillelagh music.
Yeah. And for some reason, the more technologically advanced society had lost their accent. So many issues. Let's get started because we've got a lot of issues in this episode. Andrea, what are your overall thoughts?
My overall thoughts were this was like a racist, sexist episode that didn't mean to be either, but in my opinion, came across as both. Brenna Odell, the daughter, is just, she is just like, she's a strong woman, but of course they write her being like infuriated and shrill and bossy mm-hmm. and pushy and domineering. And I was like,
I was getting some serious Taming of the Shrew vibes. Like yes. That's basically yes. what this was.
Yeah, it was 100% sure. that, yes. Here's a little bit of trivia. This episode was originally titled Send in the Clones as a play of Send in the Clowns. But as Jonathan Frakes himself put it, they didn't have the guts to stick with that title. So they just used it as a little line later in the episode. But it was supposed to be Send in the Clones, which I thought would have been way funnier. Up the Long Ladder means nothing. What does that even mean?
It means literally nothing.
But I think that kind of is good because I feel like this episode was nothing. So
yes.
The title, it's just all very forgettable for me. I mean, horrible. But then as soon as it's over, you're just kind of like, let's just put that behind us. Yeah. Let's keep moving
forward. I keep watching this episode over the years. And in my mind, before I hit play, keep going. Surely it wasn't Irish people. I must have completely like misremembered that. And then I watch it. I'm like, it's just fucking Irish people. Like, what? Why? Again. This is why I put this episode away for years.
It was Irish people with pigs and who get drunk and who cross their eyes when they drink blood wine.
Yes.
He gets one sip of blood wine and goes, ooh,
yeah.
That's a bit of the nip something. You know, you're just like, oh my God. It's pretty
repugnant. But anyway, all right. So this episode kicks off. And the episode, I don't know about you guys, but the episode starts off feeling kind of suspenseful. There's a little bit of the like bump, 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 like music. There's these kind of quick cuts around the bridge and you're feeling like something is about to happen. And it turns out
Worf gets sick.
Yes, Worf is struggling. And for a second, I thought this was the episode when everybody has that like degenerative illness where they like go back, like the de-evolution
yeah,
episode.
That, I was like, oh, is it de-evolution? We got some time because Barclay's in that. So that's not going to be for a while.
Yeah, you're right. Because at first I was like, oh, is this the de-evolution one? And then he just fainted. And I was like, oh, okay. So Worf is struggling. Riker goes into chat with the captain. And he's saying, like, here's this old, like, SOS from the Ficus sector. It's using an old, like, Earth, like, code, but hasn't been used in centuries. And they're like, we've got a little mystery on our hand. And then we walk back out onto the bridge and Worf is passed out. And one... we didn't get to see him faint. I felt so ripped off. He was just lying on the ground. And I was like, I wanted to see him like keel over. I wanted to see Michael Dorn like act that. It was very
it saved
Greek
money on a stunt.
Drama. Yeah.
Well, you know, Andrea likes the scenes where people get thrown around or fall down or get knocked out. So
I love
yeah,
a stunt
I can see
scene.
How you would be disappointed. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was just lying there. They're like, okay, Michael, we're going to say action and you're just going to, we'll just lie you down right now if that's okay. And I was like, ah, I felt kind of crappy about that. Especially since Worf, you know, Michael Dorn as an actor doesn't seem to be opposed to like doing stunts because like, you know, Lore tossed the shit out of him in the turbo lift, mm-hmm. you know, a couple mm-hmm. of episodes back. But now like he's just lying down like calmly. Okay, whatever. I'm going to let that go.
Mm-hmm. So Pulaski checks him out. And we find out that he's got the Klingon version of measles, which I was like, yikes, they still have measles? That's so unfortunate. and this, then we have this actually kind of nice moment, like right after Pulaski insults Worf, she turns around and then covers for him. I mean, she totally lies to the bridge about his condition, which is like very un-Star Trek of her because they always tell people's business, regardless of who's listening on the comms. But she does protect his reputation. And he's like very grateful to her. And that actually ended up being like really sweet, like a little moment between them that I was like, okay, you know, Pulaski has a friend. But I think that's pretty short lived.
I like this pairing as a couple of people. I think that they are fun together. And I know Pulaski gets, a lot of crap. I think she's better than people give her credit for. And I like her with Worf because they're both sort of like grumps.
Yes, I couldn't agree more with you, Gil. Like, they both are kind of like these strongly like moral compass guided characters, and they're both kind of grumps, and they work well together. They seem to have this like lovely sort of mutual respect for each other, and I really like that.
The way they designed her was to be kind of the modern version of McCoy.
Yes.
Which I don't know how modern she was. I think she was just female. Like, I don't know how different she was from McCoy. I don't know how, like, yeah, I feel like it was very, very similar. I mean, I guess she didn't have any really cool one-liners. I do like the Pulaski and Worf combination. I kind of wish they would have gone further with that because I do think she needs an ally on the ship. I mean, lots of people talk to her because you can't not talk to her because she's the only chief medical officer. Like, she's like the only doctor on the ship. But I would have liked her to have this kind of an ally. And I think it actually kind of makes more sense than Worf and Riker. And so, yeah, fast forwarding a little bit to the tea scene because we can just wrap up this storyline because that's pretty much where it ends.
It's two beats. I don't understand what the story was. Because you like you if you in the cold open, you have your strongest character pass out, you think that the story is going to be about a virus gone wrong. You think it's going to be some kind of medical episode.
Yes, another virus episode. Exactly.
Which would have
Exactly.
been so much better than what we got, honestly.
Except for the fact that we had like 16,000 virus episodes in season one. So I think at this point they were like, could we not do that? And they're like, I guess. So
Viruses are to TNG what people gaining godlike powers is to the original series.
yes, 100%. That's exactly what it is. Like it's the dartboard in the writer's room where they just throw darts at when they can't figure out what they want to write about. But yet the entire dartboard just says virus. So anywhere they hit, it's like, oh, we're writing a virus storyline today. Like it's a pie chart that's just 100% virus.
I love the pie chart analogy. That just made my day. So they're having this tea ceremony, this Klingon tea ceremony, which was actually quite lovely. And this was Worf's way of saying, thank you so much for covering for the fact that I have Klingon measles. And apparently it's not infectious to other people, which is awesome. It's probably only infectious to other Klingons. So how to get it? So many questions. But the point is, they sit and have this tea ceremony, which is pretty lovely. And he mentions, like, this is to honor you, but don't drink it because you'll die. This tea is actually poison to humans. And so she runs out, Pulaski runs out into the sick bay, comes back with a hypospray of poison antidote, which she just happened to have lying around in there. She had a hypospray of some anti-Klingon tea, anti-venom or whatever. False, false. I was like, come on, Pulaski.
I was thinking that too, where I was like, you just happen to have Klingon tea antidote lying around. Come on, lady. Although, is it just sort of general antidote for everything in a hypospray and you can just, pshoo
Maybe.
yourself and then you're good? I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe, but she could have replicated it in like 10 seconds, like to just satisfy that little bit of my curiosity. But in any case, she has it and injects herself, or hyposprays herself. And then now she can have tea with him. And I thought that was also really cool because she's like, you know what? If we're going to do this, let's do it together. I don't want to just sit and watch you have the tea. Like, I want to be a part of this, to honor you. And I thought that was really special.
I really loved that as well. And you know me, Charisse, I'm a deep diver. So I was like, this is the perfect opportunity to kind of do what I would say is my deepest deep dive I've done to date, which is on the tea ceremony. And like, what does that really represent? Different cultures have tea ceremonies, and they all like the common thread is that they the tea ceremony all represent like respect and harmony, and there's lots of preparation that goes into an important event. So I did go back in time and did a little research. I jumped in my time machine and learned about tea ceremonies. So the tradition of the Japanese tea ceremony is linked to Buddhism and dates back to the 9th century when it was taken by Buddhist monks and returned on his return from China. So that's Japanese tea. But tea had already been known in China for over 1,000 years by the time it became popular in Japan. And it was drank mostly for like medicinal reasons. But in Japanese tea ceremony, there are two concepts like called wabi and sabi. I had no idea. Wabi represents mm-hmm. the spiritual experiences of human lives, and it symbolizes like quiet and sober refinement. And Sabi represents the material side of life, and it means like weathered or decayed. So like we're kind of shedding our like materialistic ideology mm-hmm. and like becoming more one with nature. Da, da, da. So that was really neat. And then of course I'm a huge Downton Abbey person, so I couldn't talk about tea without talking about like English afternoon tea, which story tells us was introduced by the Duchess of Bedford in 1840 because lunch was served at noon and dinner wasn't served until 8 or 9 p.m. So she was starving. Sounds like a woman after my own heart because I'm always hungry. So she was hungry around 4 and was like, I need a snack. So she started doing like tea and just like little, you know, sandwiches and things. But she was one of the like premier ladies of British society. So what she did, everybody else wanted to copy. And that's how like afternoon tea got started. So that was kind of neat.
That reminds me of that Seinfeld episode where like Elaine's boss is eating a Snickers with a knife and fork or whatever.
Yes.
And then it just like catches fire in all of New York City because they're like, well, if fancy people do it, then it's good enough for regular people. That's what that sounds like to me. So
that's 100% what that is.
And Seinfeld.
Yes. So what we can gather from this is that when you're hungry in the afternoon in 1840, you eat a Snickers with a knife and fork and you're set until dinner time. That's what I got from this anecdote.
I love the detail we get about Klingon society here, where they talk a lot about like Klingon romance poetry. And I didn't write exactly what it was down, but I just liked the shading it gives to Klingons because everything is always so pain-based. And I mean, there's the fact that the tea is poisonous, I guess, is that thing. But just it was nice that it was like, yeah, we also are about focus and honoring each other and connection. Like, it was nice.
And the ceremony itself was beautiful. Like the flowers go into each cup and then all, you know, and the cups are held like a specific way. And then, yes, the Klingons would then read poetry.
So we have this scene, which is lovely. It lasts about 1 minute and then it's done. So that's the end of that. And we move on to what's going on with this SOS. So we find out that there's this planet where solar flares brush the planet's surface. The solar flares are getting to a point where they're brushing the planet's surface every 3.6 hours, which is pretty nuts. Because if we think about Earth with solar flares, whenever we have solar flares, which by the way, don't brush our surface, they just happen at the sun's surface. They mess mm-hmm. up all of our electrical equipment. So it's like, man, to have a planet where the solar flares are actually like touching the planet, that's bad news. Like, how do you have an atmosphere? How are you guys not burned to a crisp? But the short story is they needed to get the heck off of that planet. So, of course, the Enterprise was like, we can help you with that. Come on aboard.
See, that for me was a problem. That for me was a problem because in the Pen Pals episode, Sarjenka and her long-fingered ilk were dying because the planet mm-hmm. was having these like seismic activities that were causing volcanoes. And the only reason they saved her and her people is because Data became friends with her. And they were like, up, 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 up. This is the natural course of things. We don't save people, but yet you get Irish people with shillelaghs and suddenly everybody's welcome to a party on the Enterprise with straw and hay and spinning wheels.
But I think the reason is that these were colonists from Earth. So these people already were like a warp society and everything else. Whereas Sarjenka and her people, her long-fingered ilk, I love how you put that, they were a pre-warp society that had never come into contact with them.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. It was like, okay, well, these are colonists from Earth. And I feel like that's a trope in Star Trek a lot. Like, apparently whatever happened when Earth started having warp is that people just left Earth in droves and just went to all these random places. Because if you watch the original series, there's all these weird human colonies that, like, there's always a surprise there. And it's weird that there's a surprise there, because if they're human colonies, you'd think we'd know what's going on.
Yeah, I feel like it's more like they just scatter, right? They're not like keeping in touch with the homeland. They're just like, peace out, yo, especially in this example where these colonists left to get away from Earth, to go to a more simple life or whatever they said when they left. So they were trying to go far and they were not trying to keep in contact.
Yeah. So this pair of ships leaves. They are the same people and one goes and keeps their accents and the other goes and loses their accents.
Correct. And the ones that keep their accents, did not have any of the technology. They kept like the freaking looms and all kinds of
the
like
spinning wheels,
tiny technology. Yeah. And the other ship, for some reason, had all of the technology. This is how they decided to split up their shipping. One ship had all their technology and the other ship did not. Had all their
local. The other ship had pigs and cattle. Yeah. It's like, what? Yeah. I mean, do you need pigs and cattle? I mean, if you're a post-warp society, you probably could just get along with a couple of replicators, but whatever. I mean, this is the decision they made. But at any rate, Riker beams down and he's arranging for transportation of the colony and he's trying to communicate with the captain to be like, there's an issue we need to talk about. And Picard's like,
there are pigs.
Yes. He's trying to say there are pigs everywhere and straw.
I told you about the pigs though. Wait, let me just tell you about the pigs. Can you stop for a sec? Like, I have to, there are pigs.
Yes.
Captain.
Picard's just like, Riker, whatever it is, we'll talk about it later. Beam everybody up right now.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. That was... You. Exactly. And I was like, this does not sound like the captain. This just seemed to me very out of character where someone's like, but captain, but there's a problem. And he's like, no time. It's like, that doesn't seem like him at all, especially when there isn't like an imminent like explosion about to happen that like he doesn't have time to talk. But anyway.
Well, but we do have those solar flares that I think are going to burn them to a crisp. So,
oh, okay. I love that they got
a time clock.
Did they get there right in the nick of time before the first effing solar flare? Is that what happened? Because
No. The solar flares have been happening every 3.5 hours. There's more solar flares. They're just getting worse and worse. So oh, they know like okay. At some point very soon, it's just the whole plan is just going to be baked. So he is on a bit of a clock, but I think he could take another 30 seconds to hear some like security issue. But
he totally
know,
could
the
have.
Enterprise is not always on point when it comes to security.
No. Well, thank God Chief O'Brien is finally at his post and beams up the first load of colonists. And not only does he beam up the colonists, but half of their animals and a shit ton of hay. And I was like, why is there hay all over the transporter pad? If I'm standing on a rock and you transport me, you just transport me. The rock does not come with me. Like, I didn't understand this at all. And I was like, what? Why is there hay everywhere? And then immediately... we hear like whimsical Irish jig playing in the background. And Picard seems like he's also hearing it over the comms, the way that like the sound design yeah. and the shot was set up. I was like, do they have a recorder with them? Like what? Yes. It was immediately like, they're after me Lucky Charms. And I was like, oh boy.
Yeah. I was shocked that Chief O'Hara didn't say the Riddler was on the loose. Something, you know.
I know. Well, at least they were met by Chief O'Brien, which that was nice.
Yeah. This is O'Brien's time to shine.
But is it? Because then they're like, all right, moving on. Yeah. They're like moving on. This is a scene where Chief O'Brien could have really stepped out because Andrea is always complaining that Chief O'Brien has nothing to do. And this would be a perfect time for him to be an ambassador and be like, oh, you remind me of my family. You're kind of like my cousin or, you know, come on aboard. Yes. Let me show you the ropes or something.
I mean, but he wasn't a series regular yet. I kind of get that. But you're right.
But he's bouncing in and out of Klingon pain stick ceremonies and all manner of shit. It's like, why are you here? This is your one place.
This is where they're just trying to figure out what's O'Brien's role. It's like they wanted somebody like Scotty, but not Scottish. So they mixed it up. And then they were like, we really don't know what to do with this character. So we're just going to have him kind of pop in and out of scenes until he finds his place. So this is like a scene where he could have really shined, but then he didn't.
This would have been the perfect place for Chief O'Houlihan to like sweep in and totally be an ambassador. And yet Picard goes, just beam all of them to the cargo bay so we don't ever need to see your face for the rest of this episode. Thank you, Chief O'Brien. We're like, oh, but this is where you could have used him. The one time you could, okay, whatever. So they're called the Bringloidy because it's the Bringloid system that they had their colony on, and Danilo Odell is the leader.
So stupid.
It is so stupid. He quickly asks Picard if he's interested in marrying his daughter, which I was like, again, we're going back to this like time where like your daughter needs to be married off and it's your role as a man to arrange that for her. And I was like, ugh, like I kind of wanted to throw up a little bit about that. I was like, this is So gross. And then when we finally meet the daughter, she's pushy and shrill and rude, and also immediately charmed the second Riker like weird stares her. And I was like, this is just the worst, like, sexist writing. Riker awkwardly, AF, is staring at her, and she immediately is like, well, hello. You know, it's like, yes. I was like,
you're like, huh?
Immediately. Which also goes nowhere.
Again, they do go have sex. But
they
do go have sex. They don't have a relationship afterwards.
No, no, Charisse. They wash her feet. Yeah, they wash her feet. That's what they do. Which is, of course, a euphemism for sex. Yeah.
Well, like they go down to meet the people in the cargo bay, and Picard's like, all right, well, whatever. We've got to go back to the bridge. And Riker's like, I think I'll stick around for a little bit.
Because yes.
There's a lady here that I want to do.
There's a shrill, pushy woman that might need my help. And what is she doing, by the way? Her work that she's doing, she's just picking up handfuls of hay and putting down handfuls of hay.
Like, she's decorating the
car. She's moving the hay around.
In the F. And then, like, she's like the most awful person, right? She's loud. She's yelling at her father, like, duh, come on, do this, do that. And all the guys are just smiling at her as if this is so charming. And I was just like, this is what screws people up in relationships in the real world. This whole scene that being a total shrew is somehow charming, or that weird staring at a woman will make them sleep with you. Like, all of these are false. We are just lying to it's a whole generation of people watching this episode thinking this is how romance and seduction works, because it doesn't.
Well, here's something that super pissed me off. She says, I need a tour of the ship because I need to wash my feet. And so Riker's like, allow me. And he takes her on a tour. The next time we see them, she's wearing a completely different outfit. I'm like, when the hell did this happen? Number two, part of the tour includes showing her his fucking private quarters.
Yeah.
What? That's not included on the ship manifest.
I've been on dates like that. Let's go on a tour of the city. My apartment's right there. Wait a minute. What happened to the rest of the city?
She knew exactly what she was doing. Why would she wash her feet? Like, she's there to get her some Riker. That's her point. Well, and she walks in the room and she's immediately like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to act like your mother, because that's going to be my thing.
Yes.
Commander. William Riker, you're impossible.
Yes.
Who keeps your house?
She says, William Riker, you're a mess, and starts cleaning up. Number one, Riker had just fucking clarified that the ship cleans itself. So why isn't this working in his quarters, number one? Number two, why is this your responsibility as a woman to shame him using his full name, like, William Thomas Riker, you're a mess. You're not here to clean up after me. Yucky.
Another thing that's a lie is that acting like someone's parent is sexy, unless they've got a really twisted relationship with their parent. So all of this was just weird. So then they have sex, and then nothing happens from that. They don't talk to each other ever again. This is the
most
one night
stand. There's no conflict this creates. When she gets married off at the end, there's no jealousy.
They don't care at all. They could care less about what happens to each other after they leave that.
She just straight up strips in front of him. I mean, she's gorgeous. Let's be honest. She takes off her dress, and I'm like, okay.
You're like, I'll wash your feet. Girl, I'll wash your feet.
She's been doing her sit-ups, that girl. She's doing okay.
She sure has. She's got crazy abs, which I was very, very envious of, especially, you know, a year into the COVID pandemic, and I'm sitting here eating gummy bears like it's going out of fashion. So, yeah, I was super envious. I was super envious of her abs. But yet I was like, her lineup, I'm still waiting to wash my feet, and then immediately drops her skirt. Can you imagine? Let's just imagine for a second that Riker is gay. He'd be like, oh, please put your skirt back up. Like, she didn't take
any of
the
Yeah, but he wouldn't have flirted with her so hard, though. If he was gay, he wouldn't have flirted with her so hard and gave her a quote-unquote tour of the ship,
down.
Which really was a tour of his quarters. Yeah. I mean, they were both giving each other very many signals that this foot-washing ceremony was going down. So that happened.
Yeah.
Then we cut to Mr. O'Dell, who is, like, the most kitschy character. He's pretty much like a cartoon, which makes this whole episode feel really kind of sitcom-y and really dumb. Right.
Yes.
And like, Gil mentioned it earlier, right? He takes a sip of this wine that Worf makes for him, and his eyes cross, and he's like, woo, like you can almost see steam coming from his ears.
Yes.
And you're just like, what? Like, this show, yes, we get that it's trying to be lighthearted, but it just took it to a level that was just silly.
It was cartoonish.
Super silly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was totally cartoonish. I thought he was going to like jump in the air and click his heels together, for fuck's sake. I was like, this is so bad. It's so bad. It doesn't even circle back to good. It's just annoyingly bad. Although I will say the one for me really interesting part of this episode is when we find out that there was another ship. And
ooh, there was a part before that that I thought was interesting. Which was, we found out that the replicators can make synthahol and real alcohol. Yeah. I didn't know that. I thought they could only make synthahol.
So it made me laugh, actually, that she comes back into the cargo bay, head full of steam. She's so angry. And I'm like, did you just fuck? Like, why are you so mad now? Like, shouldn't you be, like, a little more relaxed? Like, you just got
Not only laid. That, but she storms in and goes, don't you guys have better things to do with your time? And I thought, you mean, like, Commander Riker? You hypocrite? Like, you just have been wasting time having sex with Commander Riker's shillelagh, and yet you are storming in here, like, you're storming in here being all pissed off that people are wasting time. Girl, get out of here. Get out of here. I feel like she would be a better parent for Worf.
Commander Riker's.
Yeah, apparently Riker didn't sufficiently tire her out. You know, maybe go to Worf next. He might be enough of a challenge.
Well, clearly, yeah.
Yeah, and Worf was into it too. He was like, she is like a Klingon female.
Yeah.
Maybe that's like the deleted scene that we don't see is that clearly it wasn't good because she does not care about Riker after that even a little. She's ready to marry anyone else. She, you know, he did not rock her world. She did not catch feelings from Commander Riker.
Nope. One of the few women immune to his charms, apparently.
Well, not immune. Like, she got what she wanted, and she came back, and she's still angry, which means...
She got what she wanted, but not really, because she was disappointed enough to still be angry, so...
Still angry. Mm-hmm.
She came in a rage, like, just looking around for someone to be mad at.
William Riker, you're a mess.
That's what she said at the end as she walked out too, apparently.
It was it bookended the date. Mm-hmm.
And he was like, let's just keep this private between us. That was his line.
I would appreciate your discretion. Yeah. You know what, Charisse? We are a mess today. That's what this scene.
We have so much to cut. This whole episode is going to be like a good 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's going to be a tight 15-minute podcast when it's finally edited. But so we find out there's this other ship. And as it turns out, there was a breach in the hull of that ship. And so only 5 of the original crew members survived. So when they go down like to this colony that's like completely the polar opposite of the effing Bringloidy, it's like sterile and clean. And the fashion is like, very futuristic, and the technology is very, very advanced. But we find out that
and doesn't have much colors, and it's kind of like has no personality and no emotion and no fun.
Yes, yes, and none of the women are screaming, so that's cool. But yes, we find out that they're all clones because again, those 5 were the only that survived, the only crew members that survived from the original ship, and so because they had all the technology on their ship and the Bringloidy had all the like cattle and pigs and shit on theirs, they used their cloning technology to make clones of themselves, but they're suffering from replicative failure. So making a copy of a copy of a copy ends up creating these like deleterious errors in the DNA. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on this? I thought making clones of yourself, such an interesting premise for a colony. I don't know what your guys' thoughts were on it.
It was better than dying. Although I guess you still die. You still die, but your DNA goes on. And they actually mentioned this later where they're like, well, we just have children to do that. So it's like they still died, but they found a way to colonize that planet using technology, which I thought was very clever. And also I thought it was sad that after all their work to like make sure that they're, you know, that they kept going in whatever way they could. Now they're at the point where they only have a couple more copyings left. And then the errors in their DNA is going to be so severe that they're just not going to function anymore. They're all going to die. And I thought that was kind of sad. Like they worked so hard and like, it was just kind of a futile exercise. And I did wonder about the clone thing.
The structure of this episode is so strange to me, right? Cause we get our C plot out of the way immediately. And then we get, you know, this intro of one world and then an intro of another world. And there's just no cohesiveness. I feel like, if I had to give development notes for this episode, I think I would have started at
the clone planet and like discovered the other planet, because I feel like these are the guys who have the problem. Like, they're dying. They're the ones who are in an emergency. I mean, the other ones are dying too, but like, they are walking around being super goofy about it. So
yeah, clearly, they just need to be
if
moved.
This episode is trying to say anything, if this episode is trying to say anything, it's about elitism, if it's about anything, right? It's about like, you know, maybe don't be so impressed with yourself and your technology that you throw away people who can help you. You have to understand that like, everyone has a place in society. Like, if it's saying anything at all, which I'm not sure it is. And then the solution is just so twee. It's like, you know, you guys are the same people, but that's not a surprise at any point in the episode. There's structurally, it's like we get that information right up top. And we know what the solution is going to be the second we find that other planet. We're like, yeah, you're the same people. You should come back together. We're just putting together a broken...
They have no home. They're looking for a new home. The Mariposans have no infusion of DNA. They need new DNA. 1 + 1 = 2. And let's keep it moving because we have adventures to go on in space. So,
So it's just so weird that it takes a full hour to get there. Like, you know, And the tea ceremony is the best part. I think we all agree with that.
So here's a question I had. So we pretty much just went over the entire end of the episode. That's how it goes. But I had some questions for you guys. Would you let yourself be cloned? Because the Mariposans asked the Enterprise crew to please, please donate their DNA into their cloning system, into their cloning library, so they could have like 1,000 more DNA samples.
But it's just dumb. It's just the dumbest solution, because you have these people already. Like, they didn't need to.
But I don't think that the Mariposans knew that the Bryn Loidy were on board when they were requesting this of the Enterprise, because Picard offers this as a solution later on. So they might not have known that there were other people on the ship.
Which, again, is really dumb.
So to answer my question, I'm guessing that's a no.
I would not want myself cloned. I can barely stand one of me, okay? I don't know about 2 or 10.
But you wouldn't be with the clones. The clones would be out on the planet, and you would be in the ship still.
Well, I love the way that they actually wrote this particular scene when they are asking Pulaski, Picard, and Riker, like, can we need an infusion of fresh DNA, really. Can you just give us like a small tissue sample? And they all say no. And I love that Riker said, like, one of me is unique, maybe even special, but 100 or 1,000 is not. So I think that's very true. And then Dr. Pulaski does say, like, even if we gave you a tissue sample, that's just a band-aid to fix the problem just for the short term, but you're still going to end up running into replicative failure in a number of generations. Mm-hmm. You have like 15 generations, and now, you know, anybody who's tried making a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy, it just disappears after a while. So it's like, you're still running into the same problem.
This definitely tracks with what we know about Riker later on, right? When we meet his transporter clone, he kind of has the same reaction. He's like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be special, or at least unique, and here I have this other me that's out there in the universe. And, you know, the resolution of that episode is, you know, he almost feels relieved that Thomas Riker seems to have a little bit of a different personality. Or, you know, there's some difference there.
Yes, that there is some difference. Now, I wonder if twins would feel differently. Like, if you asked a set of twins if they would be okay being cloned, there's already two, you know, identical twins that there's already two people who look identical. Mm-hmm. They might have very different personalities. Yeah, they look identical, which is really what a clone would be. It wouldn't behave the same as you or have the same personality as you.
Same memories and experiences. Yeah. The same DNA and the same physical characteristics.
Yes. So I wonder if twins would feel differently or not.
That's a good question. If you are a twin, please let us know. Send us an email to info@thetngpodcast, because we would love to know.
But I was I'm not sure this tracks with the reality of the world that we're in, right? Because are the Mariposans, are they spacefaring? Do they have access to other planets? Like, don't the people who live on that planet, don't they trade with other people? Don't people fall in love
I don't think so. They seem to be pretty solid on their colonies. Like, both the Bryn Loidy and the Mariposans, even though they're technologically advanced, It seems like they've used their technology to help themselves survive, but not really to mix and mingle with other people in the galaxy.
Yeah.
But is maybe it solved their problems
a long time ago.
Have they literally never thought about it?
Well, I think in the beginning it was just survival. So this was their, like, I mean, imagine they crash, there's only five people left, and they're like, all right, we have this many years, you know, potentially before we're all dead. What do we need to do? And I think that was their mindset and how they set up their society. So they're probably so much in survival mode that they weren't like, let's just make a ship and go to another planet and find some other people. Like, you know what I mean? I don't think that.
Imagine having perfect cloning technology down to the point where they clone the guy's messed up teeth. You know, every clone of the prime minister has the same dumb teeth, right? But they still haven't concentrated on getting out of their system, like, of space travel. I feel like space travel.
Well, I wonder if they're pretty isolationists. I mean, they did say, like, initially they were trying to suppress, like, sexual urges so that you don't have this, like, muddling of, like, the gene pool. But seems like maybe you need to bring that back. And that is what ends up happening. So Riker and Pulaski are basically knocked out when they're on the planet and they're assaulted. And then we have this super creepy / super cool lab scene where they're both unconscious with their eyes open and needles are going into their stomach because the scientists are pulling, like, epithelial cells out of the lining of their stomach, which is where even, like, adult stem cells still reside. So you can take these stem cells and you can clone them into whatever. And when they discover what happens, Riker and Pulaski head down to the Mariposa lab and immediately destroy the clones, which, by the way, those clones looked so creepy. I couldn't tell which one was supposed to be Pulaski and which one was supposed to be Riker. I could not tell.
I think that's the point, is they were still, like, being formed. And the fact that they could take those tissue samples and bust out some clones in a matter of hours, right? Because, like, Geordi found them a few hours later and was like, hey, guys, where were you?
Yeah, I think they both killed themselves. They killed their own clones.
Yeah, so Riker was just like, oh no, just like, you know, he set the phaser to disintegrate, and he disintegrated both bodies. And you're like, whoa, did he just kill his clone? Like, that is still a living person, even though they're not fully animated yet. Like, you just totally murdered somebody. But I guess there's no evidence because it did disintegrate.
It's the Times Square thing. You know, Picard can kill his, like, twin from the future, and there's zero repercussions.
Yeah,
but this actually did cause
so
a scandal.
Many moments in this plot that could have been their own episodes. You know, just the idea of, like, you know, kill yourself as a clone, all of that kind of stuff. Like, that's its own episode that it could be. I don't know. It's just so weird.
That totally could have been. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That could absolutely be, like, a deep question that they, like, ask themselves in a different episode that takes the entire hour to kind of, like, reach a conclusion. But the scene where Riker does kill the clones actually caused a scandal in the real world. The Right to Life Coalition thought that that was, like, akin to abortion, or basically saying that, like, oh, the show supports abortion, and, like, created this gigantic scandal. And Melinda Snodgrass, who wrote the episode, did write at length about this and, like, the blowback that happened after this episode, because she was like, I specifically put a line in Riker's mouth saying, you know, you took this from my body without my permission, and it's my body, and I have the right to decide what happens to my body. And these people, like, lost their effing minds and were, like, writing protest letters and all sort. It was, like, all manner of things, which in my mind, I don't see this as an abortion moment whatsoever. But, you know, you give anybody enough of, like, a platform to stand on, and they'll make anything out of anything. So I was like, I don't see abortion in this whatsoever.
I could see why people would think that, because this is how this population procreates. So this is their version of pregnancy, or these little, like, chambers. So I could see that connection. And it does not seem like that was what the writers were going for at all, because not only does he say that, but also after he, like, disintegrates the clones, the Maripostans come in and they're like, murderers, murderers, you just killed them. You know, they weren't just like, oh, well, just a clone. La, 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 la.
Yeah.
They were pretty upset about it, and they treated it as murder. So I feel like they acknowledge the fact that there's two sides to this entire situation, where it's like, you stole this from me. And then it's like, well, but you killed them. And so, yeah, there's some faults to be had on both sides. And it doesn't seem like they're really cheering on one side or the other. And they do make a very good point of, like, helping us have sympathy for the Mariposans and their situation. But the thing that is dumb to me is that after all of this, which I think are very good points, and, like, they could have really serious discussion here, instead, they're just like, well, we have a solution. Why don't you just let the Brynloidi come to your planet, and then poof, you've got this infusion of DNA. And now all of a sudden, beggars are choosers. And the Mariposans are all like, no, we would never have them. We just prefer to get the DNA from the Enterprise and just clone people. Like, we don't want nothing to do with the Brynloidi. And it was like, wait, a second ago, weren't you saying we're going to die? You're so desperate. You assaulted people to steal their DNA. But now when there are people who will willingly, freely give themselves to your community, now all of a sudden you're like, no, thanks. I was just kind of like
that I said, stuff. I mean, this is an allegory for class warfare. It's really clumsy. I think that, like I was telling you guys before, I think this is like the prototype for what ends up being Star Trek Insurrection. And clearly, like, the structure of that is the reveal that they're the same people comes in the third act. That's our big surprise at the end. It's like, wait a minute, these were the same people all along. And I really feel like this episode probably could have used that.
Yeah, it could have used some. I mean, it could have used literally anything other than the solution that we had, which was here's some DNA for you to use in the form of like a whole colony of people that, you know, can teach you a lot about sort of like how you live your life a different way and like teaching you about, like, you know, the birds and the bees and all that stuff. And all of a sudden they're turning their nose up to it. Right. I did love that Picard does say, like, fine, then allow your society to die. Like, I don't care.
and on another planet.
Yeah. And Pulaski is like, it's actually not so bad. Like, in 50 years, we'll have this like class M planet with a ton of technology and shit. And like no people. It's totally uninhabited.
They did a good job playing good cop, bad cop.
They really did, because then the prime minister was like, well, wait a minute. So of course, this episode has to end with Brenna screaming at the captain, because that's, quote, just like a man to sort it all out, but it falls to the women to do all the work. I was like, I need you to please stop screaming at everybody. Isn't your throat sore from just being shrill and like yelling?
Except she's right. They literally turned the women of their society into like breeding stock.
They sure did. But that's what they were anyways. Did you see how many pregnant women they had in that cargo bay? They were already breeding stock.
Everybody was pregnant and cuddling baby goats. Everybody. Like, that's what all the women were doing in the cargo bay the whole time.
This wasn't that unusual for their society. I feel like they were like, the only thing that was different was now it was each woman needs to have 3 children by 3 different men in order for the enough genetic variety to be in their society or whatever. And Pulaski's just very like, yes, I mean, this is just what has to happen. And then they're like, oh, this sounds great. And everybody's all excited. And I was just like,
yeah, all the dudes are like, oh, I guess I can make that work.
Yeah. And all the women are like, 3 husbands. Like, what?
Yeah. Well, the only thing that made Brenna go from angry to okay about this is that the prime minister has a lot of money. And I was like, wow. And she's a gold digger too. Like, this is just suddenly she wandered over and was asking him where she could go wash her fucking feet. And I was like, okay, see, this is a problem, because all of a sudden this man's got money and you're like, where can I wash my feet, Prime Minister? Come on. Like, not only is she shrill and rude and pushy and bossy, the only thing that changes her mind is because he's got money and power. And I was like, they made her even worse. Now I'm getting shrill, getting upset about how horrible this character is written. But that's like where the episode ends. And you just sort of assume everything goes hunky-dory and the ship just sails off with a cargo hold full of straw. And that's kind of that. And I thought, oh. Yeah,
I think I figured out the up the long ladder, though.
What does it mean?
Is it the DNA thing? Like, a DNA strand looks like a long ladder?
Oh,
maybe, but are they moving up anything? I don't
know. They didn't make the connection in the episode. I'm making a connection, yeah. You know, 35 years later, I'm making the connection.
Yeah, I think they just took that dartboard and threw a couple darts to some words and were like, this sounds good. Let's just call it that.
Seems like an episode, I guess.
This whole thing was just so offensive. I would not like a where are they now about this. I would actively like to never see these people again. What about you guys? What do you think?
Agreed. My big takeaway from this episode was, what the F? That's literally all I wrote on my notes. That was my takeaway. What about you, Gil?
It's better than the Royale was.
That is true. It's better than the Royale was.
You know what? There's one line of dialogue that I was like, oh, all right, go writers. When Brenna's like, haven't you ever seen a woman before? And Commander Riker goes, I thought I had.
Yeah, that was a good line.
All right.
You know what? If somebody used that on me, If Commander Riker used that on me, I might have softened a little, you know? I probably wouldn't ask him to wash my feet, but, you know, I'd be like, oh.
I would. I'm gonna wash these.
And this is where our episode takes a turn.
Yeah,
so sure. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us in this review of this episode, Up the Long Ladder. If you like this episode, please email us and tell us why. Because we got nothing.
I don't get it.
Yes. So let us know. You can send us an email to @thetngpodcast.com and let us know what you liked about it, because we don't know what it could be.
Well, next week we are talking season 2, episode 19, entitled Manhunt. Gil, thank you for hanging out with us and being a nerd about Star Trek. Where can listeners find you?
Well, you can always find me at GJ Baron on all the things. My shows, of course, are Your Late Night. So you can find Your Late Night on Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome. Charisse, thank you for going through this crap sandwich with me. And we'll see you next week, guys.
Bye, everybody. Thanks for geeking out with us. Be sure to join the crew at thetngpodcast.com to be the first to know when we do our live shows or host events exclusively for our members. We'll see you next time.